As many of you know, in addition to being the associate pastor here at Curie of Ars, I'm also the chaplain at Bishop Miege High School. Now, there are many duties that come with being a chaplain, and one of those is that I end up going to a lot of sporting events. I'm kind of the chaplain for all the teams, and the one team that is, of course, left going from this fall is the football team. Since there are so many people on the football team, I tend to spend a lot of time with them. I have mass for the football team each Friday, and you see me down there on the sideline, running around, storming the field, screaming like a little girl on Friday when we beat Aquinas to go to the state championship. It's all part of the chaplain ministry. One of the things that I do like, though, is those homilies that I have to give every Friday. I've been a chaplain 5 years, and I try every Friday to somehow work football and the spiritual life together. If I had thought about it, I should have collected them into a book, Father Sean's Football Guide to Life. But one of the things that I love to see how there is kind of a correlation back and forth between sports and the spiritual life. The team at Miege has a tradition that during the game, when it comes to the end of the third quarter and the fourth quarter is about to begin, all the players and the coaches, they all hold up four fingers on their hand and they run around the sidelines yelling, four, four. And it's of course to remind them, it's the fourth quarter. For the mathematically challenged, the fourth quarter is the last quarter. What it means is the game is going to end. There is one more quarter and then it's over. It's kind of a rallying cry almost. You know, if the team is down, it's a sign to say, don't worry, this is our quarter. We can come back. We can still do it. We've got one more chance. Or if the team is ahead, it's kind of a reminder, don't give up now. This is the fourth quarter. We got to push on to the end. It's a big reminder that the game does not go on forever. There is an ending, and there is a clear winner and a clear loser. I love how that can apply to our own spiritual life. As we come to the end of our liturgical year, the church loves to give us these kind of apocalyptic readings that remind us that life does not go on forever. It's as if the church at the end of the year kind of holds up four fingers, and not to so much remind us of the fourth quarter, but to remind us of what traditionally are called the four last things. The four last things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. The big four. Now, the church does that because it's important that we realize life does not go on forever. There is an ending, and there are clear winners and losers. We've got to take a time to think about it. Death is something that probably we don't like to think a whole lot about. It is an evil consequence of original sin. And as much as we would like to think that, well, death is the passage to the next life, and we try to kind of, you know, make it more beautiful, in the end, death is evil. It's a result of sin, but it's redeemed by Christ. But it's always this mix. We don't have to pretend that somehow we're happy with death, but rather, we do need to look at death squarely in the face to say it's going to happen. Our life does not go on forever. All of us, barring Jesus' return before we die, will experience it. What do we think about when we think about our own death? Do we try not to think about it as if things just go on forever? Rather, maybe we should allow death to be that kind of motivator to remind us we don't have forever. Maybe we need to make some changes now. Because ultimately, the way we see death depends very much on those other three things, doesn't it? Judgment, heaven, and hell. It's true, when we die, we pass on to the next life, but the first thing that happens is we stand before God in judgment. And I don't know about you, but I mean, to think of my entire life being laid out before God, who knows everything, you know, nothing gets by him. I mean, it's hard enough to get things by my parents or to fool some of the people. God not fooled. So to stand before God in judgment should give all of us a little pause. You know, sometimes we like to focus on God's mercy and say, oh, God is so merciful. Yeah, but he's also infinitely just. He's going to call us to task for all those things in our life where we said no to God. But the point of judgment is ultimately those two last things, heaven or hell. Now, we don't like to talk much about hell today. We don't like to talk about death, but even less than death, we definitely don't want to talk about hell. But in truth, as Scott Hahn, the author, has once said, the hell there is. There is hell, and it's not a bad thing. Okay? We tend to look at hell and like, oh my goodness, how could a good, loving, merciful God ever send anyone to a terrible place like hell for all eternity? Maybe we want to think that it's not even possible. But here's the thing. If we're going to have heaven and have it really mean something, it is necessary that there is hell. To say that there is hell ultimately all depends upon how you understand heaven. Now, I don't know what you think about when you think about heaven, but I think a lot of us tend to think of, well, it's a place of great reward. We'll get lots of presents from God. He'll give us all kinds of great things, you know, as if we would think that it's a place where the Royals always win the World Series and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, and, you know, it's like a big heavenly carnival with just lollipops and candy, and it's just constant partying. Maybe that's not exactly your image of heaven, but I think sometimes, you know, we treat heaven as if it's just the best of this world perfected. You know, as in heaven, we'll get everything we want. Well, there's a truth to that. It is true. In heaven, we will get everything we want. But heaven is not about presents and rewards. Heaven is not even so much a place. Heaven fundamentally is a relationship. Heaven is God. To be with God for all eternity. That's heaven. So God will give us everything we want. If we live our whole life saying, God, I want you. Everything we do, God, I trust you. God, I will follow your rules, not my will, but yours be done. God, you are my Father. I love you. I trust you. I will follow you. God, I want you. If we say that with our whole life, God will give us what we want. And that we call heaven, to have the thing we most want, God, permanently for all eternity. But the opposite is also true. If, on the other hand, we say with our life, God, I don't want you. I don't trust you. I don't like you. I don't like your rules. I'm not going to follow your rules. I don't even care if you exist. I'm not even going to bother to find out, really. If we live our whole life saying, God, I don't want you, I don't trust that you're my Father, then God will give us what we want for all eternity. We will have not God for all eternity. Ultimately, we will be stuck with ourselves for all eternity. And that we call hell. We are not made for selfishness, to turn in on ourselves. We're made for the love of God. But the great kind of impetus then that we have to life is, how are we doing? Would we be able to say that right now we choose God with our life? Or is our life, at least in some ways right now, saying no God? You know, as time runs out in the game, I said there's a clear winner and loser. That's not meant to frighten us. The truth is, if we want to be on the winning team, we can. Jesus has already won. But it is serious. The prophet Daniel tells us today that many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake. Some will live forever. Others shall be an everlasting horror and disgrace. Maybe it would be good if we look at life more as if we're in the fourth quarter. Maybe part of our problem is that we think life will just go on forever. Now, I don't know when Jesus is coming back. The paper at Miege the other day wanted to interview me about the end of the Mayan calendar in December and how the world will probably end in 2012. Father Sean, what do you think? Well, the gospel today tells us very clearly, of that day or hour, no one knows, neither the angels in heaven, nor the Son of Man, nor the Mayans, nor any other crazy person who goes on TV and says the world will end. You might say, the Mayans are dead and the church is alive, and we don't know when that time will be. But I do think it would be good for us to kind of see that maybe it's the fourth quarter, as the church gives us these readings, holds up those four fingers for us, the four last things. It's not meant to scare us. You know, as the team is holding up their four fingers on the sideline, I never hear anyone saying, oh no, it's the fourth quarter, what will we do? We might lose. Panic. No, I see guys, they're ready. They're like, four, yeah man, let's go get them. This is our quarter. We're going to go out, we're going to take it, and we're going to win. I think that's kind of the attitude the church wants us to have. You know, are we behind in some ways right now? Okay, it's the fourth quarter. There's time. We can change. We can make some adjustments. Are we doing pretty good in some ways? Are we ahead? Well, don't quit now. It's the fourth quarter. It's time to persevere to the end. Time is running out, no matter whether it be Jesus' return or our death. But that is meant to give excitement to our lives. There is a clear line at the end. It is the fourth quarter. I pray today that we would have the confidence then, as we consider death, judgment, heaven, and hell, that we would, like those football players, boldly hold up our four fingers and say, yes, four last things are good. I know them. They give excitement to my life. And then as we all do it together, we get to go and say, fourth. It's the fourth quarter. Let's go out. Let's go out and win.